addressed the need for opening temples and centers of Krishna consciousness, and also for distributing transcendental literatures, distributing prasad, reaching out to give people the chance to come in contact with Krishna. So, in a nutshell, then, this is the essence of the life of the devotees, to remain themselves strict and happily situated on the platform of spiritual life, despite all kinds of, you know, demands which may be there due to the family or one's own mind and senses. Despite all these things, to remain fixed, and then to, from that position of strength, to give a helping hand to others, you know, to climb onto the boat, transcendental boat of Krishna consciousness. So this should be our meditation, how to remain steady in Krishna consciousness, and thus individually and as a society, so we can become stronger, and automatically that will give strength to others. So, well, I'll finish here. Any questions? No, I wouldn't say that. After all, as a family, there is some association with one another, so there's a group of devotees there. And, you know, if they're serious, and if they do come, you know, to temples whenever possible to get some more association, and if they, you know, if they maintain strictness in their practice and a desire to give Krishna consciousness to others, then they can go from strength to strength. They can create an association of devotees around their own home, which is very nice, you know. But that's kind of like first class devotee. Prabhupada said he doesn't even have to be told all the time what to do. Third class, tell him what to do, but he doesn't listen, and he, you know, he makes mistakes. Second class, you know, you tell him what to do, and he'll listen. And even if he doesn't like to do, you know, he'll still try and do. Third class person, if he doesn't like it, he just won't do it, even if he's told to do. See, but a first class devotee, even without having to tell him all the time what to do, he understands. You know, because he's reading the books, he understood the instruction of spiritual master, so he doesn't have to be always told. So such kinds of devotees, they can be sent, you know, to some other country or, you know, some other city, or even within, you know, even if they live far away from a temple in the city, they may start some Namahada preaching there. So, you know, because they're serious and because there is some association and because they have the mood to create more association. So we need such kinds of families. That's very nice if there are. But in many cases, we see that the devotees aren't strong enough. And that's why it's generally better that they do, you know, live near to a temple.
You were saying about the devotees that, you know, they self-harmonizing, associated with non-devotees, become weakened in that. And I've often heard it said that for those devotees, there's also Lord Chaitanya's mercy is involved here, so special mercy to help protect those devotees. I was wondering if you could explain what that is.
Well, that special mercy will only be there if one, you know, if he is, you know, going on chanting rounds and reading the books and coming back regularly to the association of the devotees. But it, you know, it's special mercy in the sense that the person, you know, has to go out a lot in association with the non-devotees. Then, you know, you can say there's a risk there, but, you know, Lord Chaitanya is helping him because he's taking a risk. Prabhupada, he said that in an army, the soldiers who go on the front lines, they're generally most glorified because they're taking the greatest risk. See? So in the same way, a devotee who is going out, say, collecting Lakshmi or distributing books, he has to be given encouragement, and also the Lord is giving him a certain special protection. He can't just expect that, you know, that will automatically be there. You know, one has to invoke the mercy of the Lord by you know, having proper sadhana, chanting, reading, and coming regularly to the temple. Then one will get more strength and determination. Of course, also some devotees, by their particular nature, are, you know, capable of, you know, rescuing more, liberating more Lakshmi, and naturally, you know, that's inspiring for them also to do that and to bring more Lakshmi to Krishna. That's inspiring, and it inspires the other devotees, it inspires them. So there's a certain impetus and momentum in the very nature of that activity itself, because that's like a person's, you know, it's his natural occupational duty. So he feels comfortable in that activity. But you know, still he has to keep the proper spiritual balance. If he keeps the proper spiritual balance, if he's situated in an activity which is, you know, natural, you know, his particular varna, then everything is all right. You know, he'll go from strength to strength, and he'll get the special mercy of Lord Chaitanya. But the others can get special mercy of Lord Chaitanya also. You know, say a brahmana who's a very, you know, meticulous and you know, careful worshipper of the deities, well, he'll also get very special mercy, isn't it? And the devotees will be pleased and satisfied with him. But it's a fact that to go out in the material world, one definitely needs the protection of the Lord. Should what? Well, I'm just saying that the more children that are there, the more requirement is there to provide for them. So, I mean, some of our great acharyas had many children. Bhaktivinoda Thakur had many, many children. Of course, in India, the situation is a little bit different. There's a kind of a larger family. You know, there's a lot of help from the, you know, brothers and sisters and uncles and aunts and grandmothers and grandfathers and so forth. So it becomes easier to maybe take care of more children in such an environment or situation. Usually in the Western countries, just a father and mother and looking after, and as many children becomes a great, you know, a great burden of, it may be burden of love, but still it's a great burden to bring them all up. So that could detract if there's from one's spiritual practice. Or yeah, anyway, your question. Go on.
Sorry. Even if you can't save my children.
Yeah, I mean, if one can avoid entering family life, that's best. And, you know, even if he's in family life, if he has no children, then it's simpler in the sense he can give more time and attention for spiritual practices and devotional service. Although that's obviously not, you know, not the purpose of householder life, to enter householder life and not have any children. And you might as well not enter it. But if one does enter it and, you know, somehow by fate he has no children, then it tends to make it easier for him to engage in his spiritual practices. Go on. Yeah, well, that's true. But even it, all right, so he enters family life and he has intention to have children, but the fewer children that he has, the easier it will be to keep his focus on spiritual life. Yeah?
Sometimes you were saying that, you know, when devotees fall down and don't have the holy, they'll come back. Many times when devotees do come back, it seems like
may or may not be there. And sometimes the devotees who go away and they come back, they have in their own mind some kind of guilt or paranoia or some kind of thinking like that. It's not necessarily true. I mean, oftentimes the devotees are just going on with their service, but sometimes it may also be true there. But I was making the point in the class that, even in the association of devotees, there are going to be, maybe sometimes something said which is not so tactful, or maybe sometimes someone is given some chastisement, and he actually deserves some chastisement, but he's overly sensitive about it. You have to be a little resilient and, willing to be able to take a little bit of chastisement or rectification. Otherwise, if you're too sensitive, then it's a false ego. And it's a false ego who's just saying, well, I'm right, and I haven't done anything wrong, and therefore, all these people are wrong anyway, and I'll just go on doing whatever I want. So one has to become humble. He has to feel, I'm actually making a lot of mistakes, and I'm suffering because of it, and I need the association of devotees, even if it means, I might have to be corrected in my behavior. So I think it's not fair to, if somebody goes out and he's just blaming the devotees, the devotees don't care about me, or they, look down on me, or this thing and the other thing. It's a very generalized sort of statement that you made. There are many different devotees. Some devotee may be, very caring and very helpful, and another devotee not so much. Another devotee, he may not be so interested to help someone who's having difficulty because he himself may be having difficulties. So, that's a general statement. You have to see the individual case. As a general rule, we should try to, welcome devotees and be grateful for whatever service devotees do and any time they come. That's a fact. But then again, sometimes, a devotee, he'll only come a little bit. They come a little bit, but he may start speaking a lot of negative things in the association of other persons, discouraging them in their service. So that's also not good. And it's almost better not to be a devotee, around the devotees at all, than to come a bit and then criticize a lot. That's very very disturbing and very detrimental for the Krishna consciousness movement. We have to see the good side as much as possible and try to work on improving it, try to work on improving ourselves, and try to, in this way, be of positive positive value, be part of the solution and not part of the problem, as the saying goes. Any other point? You mean that the devotee is going out preaching and he needs to be paid to do it?
Yes.
And also services in the temple. Mm. Well, ideally, of course, if it didn't happen, that would be very nice. But then again, if it's Grihastha devotees who are involved in these services, they obviously have the need to maintain their family and they pay for the children to go to school. It depends how many children they have. And if they can't get some kind of income or payment, then it just means they have to go outside and work, or, you know, do something to produce income. So obviously there has to be some maintenance. I mean, even the brahmacharis or brahmacharinis, they have to be maintained. They may not be getting a check, paycheck, but they're getting, you know, a place to stay, they're getting some food, some prasad, and some clothing when it's necessary. So, you know, we do have, and the temple may be paying for the, you know, electricity. The temple had built the building where they're living. You know, so it obviously costs money to maintain the devotees. So I don't see how it can be avoided in the, you know, case of Grihastha if he's going to give his full time in temple service. Of course, if he's, you know, demanding very high sum, then that's not very good. But obviously he will need, you know, some basic requirement, some basic income. If there were more brahmacharis and brahmacharinis, and it would be, you know, easier to do all the work in the temple with their help. But since there aren't enough brahmacharis and brahmacharinis, then it has to be done by grihastha devotees. If there were more brahmacharis and brahmacharinis also, there'd be more income. Because they'd, you know, be willing to go out and collect and bring back more Lakshmi without need of so much maintenance. So, you know, I think that this is, it's all, you know, it's a kind of, I don't think we can call it a vicious cycle, but in some sense it's kind of, you know, it's a kind of situation or syndrome that the this particular center is in. And of course the grihasthas are individually earning, and in order to make this kind of community successful, it means that, you know, the grihasthas have to come forward as much as possible to do service and to give Lakshmi. After all, every grihastha is earning something to, you know, maintain his family, and most of the grihasthas are engaged in that kind of activity. So we may have to support a few persons who are doing the full-time service of worshipping the deity or managing the temple. But if we don't do that, and if we don't have any brahmacharis and brahmacharinis, then how can it go on? We have to face that reality. That may be there, but then again, that's going back to the temple, that Lakshmi. If the rent's being charged, it means it's going to the temple. What happens if there's no rent being charged, and the grihastha anyway says, I've got to maintain my family, and I don't have time to do service, or I can't give any money? So that's at least one way of, you know, making sure that some Lakshmi comes to the temple. It's also standard practice in India, in temples, to that the deity has property and the deity rents the property out. It's completely standard. I've read books about the organization of temples, for example, Singhachalam Temple, which has many, many, many properties, and it's completely standard. They're rented out, or the land is rented out, and you know, a certain amount comes to the deity, and the rest the householder keeps. And with the, you know, houses and quarters and buildings, they're also rented out. And generally they also, their gifts to their grihastha pujaris, they're giving some, you know, help and remuneration from the temple. So it's not unvedic or unstandard to have that kind of a system. Yeah.
I was just going to say, functions without concentrating on how to make that clip a thing. So the when the lips, which is now implemented, took place, and the persons who inaugurated the rent system will put themselves on the payroll. It was a little different. It's like not only does volumes use those particular workers who were going out and collecting and were paying the rents or are paying the rents, but when they saw the other side of things also, it has to be done in a fair way. There's a minimum, like to my opinion, also which I've seen in like if you go to Tirupati, they have a very nice system, very minimal. And then everyone engages in the service of the temple, irrespective of their particular duties. They obviously have to, they have to maintain themselves, the managers, the this kind of that thing. There is But it's not kind of, they're all on high payrolls, and the other ones are being forced into paying higher rents. Yeah, by, I mean, by comparison, I mean, if you look down the back, I mean, it's not that clear. Luxury apartments.
Well, I mean, that one way or another, there has to be sufficient Lakshmi coming into the community in order to maintain it. Now, the community can work as a like a whole unit in a sense that, well, there'll be some people who are going out and they're collecting Lakshmi and they're bringing it back into the community, and that's providing enough to support the others who are doing full-time service. You know, so that's, well, that's how things work in a city temple, and it's a bit harder to run a Grihastha community like that, but, you know, if there's a strong community feeling, and those who are actually capable realize that they're the ones that are going to have to go out and they're going to have to bring back the Lakshmi to support the whole thing, then fair enough. It can work like that. No objection. And that's, of course, very nice because, you know, it makes for a, you know, a bigger, a more of a, you know, community feeling. And I've also noticed that there's a great influence of the environment, the outside society on the devotees. I mean, for example, in India or even in Russia, devotees seem to be able to, you know, better adjust into that communal kind of living style. In Russia, they've been used to communism. It's a completely acceptable, you know, kind of way of life for, you know, people to, you know, group together. They had those kolkhoz farming, collective farming. So, you know, many, many families were living together in a kolkhoz, in a collective farm, and they're all working together. The, you know, produce of the farm, you know, would be sold and the income would be shared around like that. So that's kind of by their social environment, natural for them. Whereas in this country, you know, the stress is on the individual family becoming kind of wealthy, having properties, big house, and it's very deeply ingrained in the psyche of the people and the, you know, even the devotees, you know, when become a grihastha, the feeling that this has to, that, you know, this really must be there. See, like in India, they have this system where the family tradition is so strong from generation to generation. So, you know, automatically the younger people, they're kind of, you know, they receive a lot of help from their family members when they enter into the grihastha ashram. Really, the arrangements are made between the families. You know, when people get married, so, you know, there's a lot of involvement of a lot of people to try to help them to, you know, be stable, and, you know, if there's any difficulty, to give them some assistance. But here in this country, traditionally, people are kind of on their own when they get married, and it's a struggle, it's difficult. So, of course, in the society of devotees, we should be able to work together and help one another, but still it's kind of a first generation of, you know, Grihastha devotees growing up, and you know, it's a bit of a struggle because they're not getting so much financial help, say, from the the parents, so many times the parents may not agree with what the children have become devotees. They don't understand. They're not willing to give any help or financial assistance. Sometimes it does happen. So the thing is that, you know, this is like a pioneering stage in the development of Krishna consciousness communities. And it's also, I mean, it's, one could be argued it's not completely clear the exact kind of social structure or economic structure that should be there within our communities. Of course, Prabhupada said spiritual communism. So if you just, you know, if you just take it like that, spiritual communism, well, Krishna's in the center. He's, I think we were reading in Tamal Krishna Maharaj's Vyasa Puja offering yesterday that communism puts the state in the center, but we have to put Krishna in the center. Okay, fair enough. But that, does that mean that the rest of our activities should be structured like communist society? Well, why not? It's spiritual communism. You know, why don't we do like that? You know, you all work and give all your money to the government, and then they'll share it out. And if there's enough to go around, you know, then okay, you'll live comfortably. And if as a community you can't produce enough income, then you should all share and live. You all have to live more austerely. You may all not be able to have a car. You may all have to have a push bike. You may all have to, I mean, China, it's communist, most people are riding around in push bikes. Or they go in the public bus. You know, so maybe we'll have one bus that'll go to town once a day and it'll come back in the evening, and you have to be satisfied like that. Or maybe we can't afford to have, you know, ghee and, you know, sweet rice. We just have to eat carrots and potatoes and be satisfied like that. I mean, that's communism, you know. So if we say then that Prabhupada said spiritual communism, let's be spiritual communists. And let's make some big sacrifices. The communists, they pulled down anybody who was rich and had a lot of money. They pulled them down and they said, you got to live in a very simple place. You know, you'll see there, everybody lives in a little apartment, one room. If you have no kids, you get a one-room apartment. It's one room and a kitchen and a bathroom. And then if you have one or two kids, you'll get an extra room. They change it to another apartment, which has two. If you have three or four kids, then you get, you know, another room. And that's as far as you can go. You know, a three-room apartment is about the biggest apartment you can get there. You know, so that's communism. No one's allowed to become, you know, too wealthy. But is that system going to be functional in a Western country where we're coming from such a background? The system in a Western country is more, you know, user pays. If you can get ahead and get rich, fair enough. And if you can't, you gotta, you know, be satisfied to live pretty humbly. Yeah.
It's not that the emphasis is on user pays, like the opposite. I mean, you gave the example of the communist system, but it's not the ultimate goal also to be in the user pays system. I mean, none of these systems are actually practical. They're based for the sense enjoyer, for the controller, that are, you know, humble, the I am the, you know, but actually devotees are not like that. Our emphasis, our emphasis is, you know, we're trying to serve the Lord in our various functions. So it shouldn't really be so much that we are overburdened by the, we should be freed up so that we can do those things. It used to be that more arrangements were made that we could go out and collect, or we could, I don't see any harm in marathons, things like that, but we can jointly work together. We have a problem, go out and do it. Not that we create little boxes first and then gradually try and find things to put in. Better we go out and find something and then put the boxes upwards once you've got something in your hand. That way the devotee will be very
Anyway, the point is there are many factors to make that happen, you know. there's need of employment for devotees and grihasthas whereby they can maintain their families, and there's need of management also to be able to encourage the devotees. So there are many different ingredients that are required, and you know, say you might have a good manager, but somehow or other, if there's not, you know, if there's not a willingness or sufficient number of devotees to go out and bring in sufficient income, then the manager won't be able to be supported. Then there'll be no manager, isn't it?
But if the manager also can't hear,
yeah,
that's also a problem.
Of course, that's also a problem. And then we, you know, take out this manager, take out that manager. Then, you know, after we tried so many managers, then find no manager. That's also, you know, there are many kinds of aspects of the problem. But it's all, I think that, you know, it's all part of, you know, social development within ISKCON. The exact type of social structure is not really clearly understood within these grihastha communities, rural communities, and we can't say that there's any really ideal example anywhere in ISKCON that you can look to and say that this is a model and this is how we're going to follow. So that's why I said it's a pioneering stage. Therefore, devotees have to be, you know, they have to be very tolerant. They have to, you know, not just point the finger all the time, you know, the manager this, the manager that, the manager the other thing, because it's jolly difficult to have to be the manager in such a situation, and then nobody wants to do it. Okay, you manage. You become the manager. Let's see how you go. that would be the attitude of persons who are trying to manage, you know.
Some have an idea.
Some persons have ideas, and the ideas are so, you know, radical that they just, you know, it's just impractical to even try them. But you know, it's still maybe initially, but then there's a risk also. So we have to move in a very careful way, because within such a society of devotees, you know, we don't want to lose devotees. We don't want to upset the apple cart completely. And, you know, making very big radical changes can also create big disasters. So, you know, there has to be a willingness on everyone's part to, you know, some give and take. And, you know, Bhaktivinoda Thakur said that progress is a series of steps, a series of changes in the right direction. So there has to be dialogue, and, well, we can talk about these things and try to improve the situation. But over and above all, your devotees should have a willingness to stick with it and to help as much as they can, to come forward, to be a good example of them, each and every devotee in his own spiritual life, because a community is made up of individuals, and if one individual backs off, he doesn't come to the program, his own spiritual life suffers, but the community's spiritual life also suffered. There's another person less, he's not coming, and then other person thinks, well, why shall I come also? So before you know it, the spiritual program becomes very, very weak. You see, so that has to be there first and foremost, and that's the stress that Narad Muni's giving here. And then to do as much service as possible for the temple, and to take as little Lakshmi as possible and to give as much Lakshmi. You know, if everyone individually tries to develop that kind of mood, then that's the way in which the community can be built and developed.
You're explaining it in this chapter. It talks about ideal family life, but it's not looking at the details of how the family is run. So just a comment, I'd like to make a comment after that. You know, we've been discussing quite a few details about how communities run, but the most important thing is to remember that Krishna should be the centre. And particularly, Prabhupada taught us that preaching is the most important thing. So, it seems to me that the more we preach, according to what we can manage, then other facilities just arrange themselves. And because if we preach, then people come and they give donations. If you make the effort, like book distribution is the classic example, that if you go and give books, then the more books you give out, the more money you get back. And more people come. And when you preach together, or if you have this almost like a materialistic concept that we have a property and we have to maintain. But if we're understanding that we have Krishna and that we want to, you know, tell everyone about Krishna, then that's more of a unifying principle.
Yeah, I mean, you know, preaching, Prabhupada said preaching is the essence. So preaching is the life of a devotee. It gives him life and enthusiasm. If there's no preaching, Prabhupada said, then there's no life. So it's a fact that, you know, if the more preaching spirit is there, then, you know, the more easy it will be to take care of all these other things. But, you know, it's also a reality of grihastha life that, you know, there's has to be concern about all these kind of things, and we can't just throw them all out the window. At least the grihasthas can't. It's also good preaching to be able to show that, you know, someone's got children and he's bringing them up, you know, in a responsible way. Otherwise, you know, because most people out there, they're married, so they're going to be looking at, you know, how are devotees doing it? How is it there? Society structured, what's their school like, those kind of things. They're also in and of themselves, they're important aspects of our preaching, and so we have to, you know, think through and try to develop the ways in which to run the community very nicely. But as you said, if there isn't a preaching mood, if the overall goal isn't to preach, and if the individual devotees also don't at least give some of their time to preaching, then everything will kind of dry up and won't get Krishna's mercy. So that's another aspect. Not only, you know, devotees have to maintain their own sadhana, you know, do some service, give as much as they can, but they also should go out, just like Prabhupada said, at least once a week, go out on Sankirtan or, you know, go to some preaching programs or what have you. I'll have to finish, actually. I got some appointment very shortly. We can carry on tomorrow if you like. So thank you. Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam. Punjabi Hari. Gopi Jana Balaba Giribara Dari. Gopi Jana Balaba Giribara Dari. Yasoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana. Yasoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana. Yamuna Tira Banachari. Yamuna Tira Banachari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hari. Gopi Jana Balaba Giribara Dari. Gopi Jana Balaba Giribara Dari. Yasoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana. Yasoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana. Yamuna Tira Banachari. Yamuna Tira Banachari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hari. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna.
Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Radha Giri Hari, Radha Giri Hari Radhe. Jaya Jagannath, Jaya Jagannath, Jaya Baladev, Jaya Subhadra. Jaya Gaura Nitai, Jaya Gaura Nitai, Jaya Gaura Nitai, Jaya Gaura Nitai. Jaya Prabhupada, Jaya Prabhupada, Prabhupada, Jaya Prabhupada.
Jai Om Vishnupad Paramahansa Parvrajakachari Astatara Sata Sri Simad Abhai Charanara Vinda Bhakti Vedanta Swami Shila Prabhupada Ki Anantakori Vaishnav Rinda Ki Namacharya Shila Haridas Thakur Ki Prem Sikaho Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Sivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vinda Ki Sri Sri Radha Krishna Gogobinath Shyamakunda Radha Kunda Giri Govardhan Ki Sri Vrindavan Dham ki, Sri Mayapur Navadip Dham ki, Sri Jagannath Puri Dham ki, Ganga Mai ki, Jamuna Mai ki, Bhakti Devi ki, Tulsi Maharani ki, Sri Sri Radha Giridhari ki, Gaura Premanandi, all glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to Sri Guru and Sri Guranga, all glories to Srila Prabhupada. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Yatra yatra hare racha. Sadesha shreya sampadam. Yatra Ganga Dayo Nadya Puraneshu Chavishruta Yatra Yatra Hare Aracha Sadesha Sreya Sampadam Yatra Ganga Dayo Nadya Puraneshu Chavishruta Yatra Yatra Hare Racha Sadesha Sreya Sampada Yatra Ganga Dayo Nadya Puraneshu Chavishruta Yatra Yatra Wherever Hare Of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. Archa, the deity is worshipped. Saha, that. Desha, place, country or neighborhood. Sreyasam, of all auspiciousness. Padam, the place. Yatra, wherever. Ganga Adaya, like the Ganges and Yamuna, Narmada and Kaveri, Nadya, sacred rivers, Puraneshu, in the Puranas, supplementary Vedic literature, Ch, Purusha, also Vishruta, are celebrated. Translation, auspicious indeed are the places where there is a temple of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, in which he is duly worshipped, and also the places where there flow the celebrated sacred rivers mentioned in the Puranas, the supplementary Vedic literatures. Anything spiritual done there is certainly very effective. Please repeat. Auspicious indeed are the places where there is a temple of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, in which he is duly worshipped, and also the places where there flow the celebrated sacred rivers mentioned in the Puranas, the supplementary Vedic literatures. Anything spiritual done there is certainly very effective. Purport. There are many atheists who oppose the worship of the deity of the Supreme Personality of Godhead in the temple. In this verse, however, it is authoritatively stated that any place where the deity is worshipped is transcendental. It does not belong to the material world. It is also said that the forest is in the mode of goodness, and therefore those who want to cultivate spiritual life are advised to go to the forest. Vanam gato yad darim ashrayeta. But one should not go to the forest simply to live like a monkey. Monkeys and other ferocious animals also live in the forest, but a person who goes to the forest for spiritual culture must accept the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead as shelter. Vanam gato yad darim ashrayeta. One should not be satisfied simply to go to the forest. One must take shelter of the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In this age, therefore, since it is impossible to go to the forest for spiritual culture, one is recommended to live in the temple community as a devotee, regularly worship the deity, follow the regulative principles, and thus make the place like Vaikuntha. The forest may be in goodness, the cities and villages in passion, and the brothels, hotels, and restaurants in ignorance. But when one lives in the temple community, he lives in Vaikuntha. Therefore it is said, Shreyasam Padam, it is the best, most auspicious place. In many places throughout the world, we are constructing communities to give shelter to devotees and worship the deity in the temple. The deity cannot be worshipped except by devotees. Temple worshippers who fail to give importance to the devotees are third class. They are Kanishta Adhikaris in the lower stage of life. As it is said in the Srimad Bhagavatam 11.2.47, Acharyam eva haraye pujam ya shadaye hate natad bhakteshu chanyesu sabakta prakrita smritaha. A person who is very faithfully engaged in the worship of the deity in the temple but does not know how to behave toward devotees or people in general is called a Prakrita Bhakta or Kanishta Adhikari. Therefore, in the temple, there must be the deity of the Lord, and the Lord should be worshipped by the devotees. This combination of the devotees and the deity creates a first-class transcendental place. Aside from this, if a Grihastha devotee worships the Shalagram Shila, or the form of the deity at home, his home also becomes a very great place. It is therefore customary for members of the three higher classes, namely the Brahmanas, Kshatriyas, and Vaishyas, to worship the Shalagram Shila, or a small deity of Radha Krishna or Sita Ram, in each and every home. This made everything auspicious. But now they have given up the deity worship. Men have become modernized and are consequently indulging in all sorts of sinful activity, and therefore they are extremely unhappy. According to Vedic civilization, therefore, the holy places of pilgrimage are considered most sacred. And still there are hundreds and thousands of holy places like Jagannath Puri, Vrindavan, Haridwar, Rameshwar, Prayag, and Mathura. India is the place for worshipping or for cultivating spiritual life. The Krishna consciousness movement invites everyone from all over the world, without discrimination as to caste or creed, to come to its centers and cultivate spiritual life perfectly. Yatra yatra hare archa sadesha shreya sampadam yatra gangadayo nadya puraneshu cha vishritu. Auspicious indeed are the places where there is a temple of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, in which he is duly worshipped, and also the places where there flow the celebrated sacred rivers mentioned in the Puranas, the supplementary Vedic literatures. Anything spiritual done there is certainly very effective. So here Narad Muni is instructing Yudhisthira Maharaj. The chapter is entitled Ideal Family Life. So we can see that the stress here in this chapter, it's not, why are you doing that? What's his name? The boy. Name? Kana. Hare Krishna. So, the stress, it's called ideal family life, but it's not a description of how to make money and, you know, how to work out the, you know, psychological differences between the man and the wife, or how to bring up the children. Or that's not the stress in this chapter here. The stress is on devotion to Krishna and performing activities which will be spiritually beneficial. So we can therefore understand that that is a key to creating ideal situation within the family. Key is to practice devotional service and to worship Krishna. So therefore, a householder has to give part of his time, if not all of his time, for worshipping the Lord, devotional activities. And even if, say, he has to, you know, work in some situation to earn money for supporting his family, where he's not associating with devotees, well, all the more reasons why the rest of the time he needs to be in an environment where he actually is associating with devotees, so there's going to be some purification. Because after all, constantly going and associating with non-devotees means there's going to be some kind of contamination there. It may be a little subtle contamination if the person is a serious and determined devotee, so he won't be very much affected. But, you know, he can only minimize that negative effect if he keeps a good, strong devotional program. Otherwise, what happens is, if he doesn't maintain a strong devotional program, his spiritual strength becomes eroded away gradually, until what we say, he's right out there. And we've seen some cases, you know, even within our own group of devotees here, we've seen such cases of persons who were nice devotees, serious devotees, and they become involved in improving their family condition materially to such a degree that their devotional activities have reduced. You know, it happens gradually. You know, first of all, maybe not able to come to the temple programs, you know, less and less coming to Mangalarti classes, and of course less and less doing any kind of service around the temple. I have to work hard, and then when I come home I have to look after my family and then maybe produce few children, and it's very difficult, it becomes very difficult, so at least I'll chant my rounds. And so the person is chanting his rounds. But then after some time, well, it's too difficult to manage all my rounds in the morning at home. But I'm chanting in a clicker, maybe during, you know, lunch break or on the way to work or something like that. But gradually, that also becomes eroded away until, you know, nothing, no spiritual practice is there at all. And then, of course, may, you know, need to get some psychological counseling or, you know, some new age method of, building up one's self-confidence to be able to, you know, function in the world today. And then perhaps after some time even move farther away from the temple, and before you know it, the person, you know, you when do you see him? You see, maybe comes on Janmashtami or comes on, you know, some big festival, Rath Yatra, puts in a short appearance. Or maybe doesn't even come at all for that. Isn't it? The devotees who don't even come for those functions. So this is, it's of course very, very unfortunate. But why is it happening? It's happening because not giving the primary place in one's life and one's activities to one's spiritual development and spiritual practices, minimizing those things and gradually maximizing more and more the external arrangements for comfortable family life. Of course, obviously there are stresses and strains in family life, and often we see when devotees first enter into the Grihastha ashram, then there's a flurry of activity to, you know, create, build a nest, to create some, you know, situation, to say, you know, have some living facility or whatever, and a worry is there, oh, I have to do it now while I'm young, because later on I'll be too old, I won't be able to get all these things together. So, you know, it may be understandable that's going to happen or has to happen, but the degree to which one absorbs himself in that varies from person to person. So an intelligent man, he won't over-endeavor in that regard, and, you know, he'll make sure that he keeps a good spiritual, balanced spiritual program, and he'll be satisfied, you know, to live in a fairly simple way. Those who are sincere, they'll cling on to the lotus feet of Krishna and cling on to the association of devotees, and even though there may be a little bit of a dip in the intensity of their spiritual practices, still, you know, because they're serious, they can, you know, ride through it, and afterwards they're again strengthen their devotional life. And we do hope that those who have gone completely away, you know, after some time, we do hope they'll, you know, have some realization and come back again closer into the association of devotees. But anyhow, these are the stresses and strains of family life. One should understand that it's complex family life, because there are quite a number of people involved in any family. At least there's more than one person. There's bound to be two persons, and usually they're going to become three or four or five or six or whatever. So obviously it's much simpler to take care of one person. And, you know, one doesn't require very elaborate arrangements, you know, just to look after this material body. So that's why the Vedas, Vedic leaders do advise that if a person can remain without entering a family life, that will be simpler, much simpler. And even if he does enter family life, if he can minimize the number of children, no children is easier, obviously, and one child is, a bit more, you know, difficult when it starts going 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, then it becomes bigger and bigger, you know, arrangements that have to be made for maintenance, for education, etc., etc. So one has to therefore consider, weigh up these things very, very, very carefully and try to take his decisions in a sober fashion. But then and again, we are in these material bodies, and there are, you know, very powerful forces at play. The attraction between man and woman is very strong. So this is very, you know, almost helplessly, the living entities are, you know, carried along on the waves of the material nature. Even the devotees, because of having a material body, they are, you know, more or less obliged to enter family life in many, many circumstances, because trying to be celibate, to live alone, becomes in many cases very, very difficult at a certain age of life. So that's why most of the devotees are entering into family life. So that's all right. Prabhupada said no harm. And in fact, he encouraged devotees to marry in the early stages, although after some time he stopped encouraging them so much because of seeing so many problems arising. But still, that's perfectly bona fide. There are so many nice grihastha devotees of the Lord, so bona fide to enter family life, but not bona fide to reduce down one's spiritual activities and overemphasize the material arrangements, because that results in spiritual disaster, spiritual weakness, and we can say spiritual suicide. So therefore, a devotee, especially one who is entering the family life, he has to really pray to Krishna that, you know, please don't let me drift away from your lotus feet. Don't let me drift away from the association of devotees. Let me somehow or other be satisfied to live simply and dedicate my life for the service of Krishna, service of the spiritual master. So, therefore, Narad Muni, he is stressing in this chapter these devotional activities. So in this verse, you see, he's glorifying the temple of the Lord, where the Lord is worshipped, and the sacred rivers, which are mentioned in the scriptures. So the temples are being glorified, the sacred rivers are being glorified, the scriptures are being glorified, and Krishna is being glorified here in this verse. So he says, anything spiritual done in these places is very effective. It is a great potency. So that's why devotees in a grihastha ashram must live close to the temple and must come to the temple and associate with the devotees and do some service. Now, granted, that is a sacrifice, because the same time and energy one could be using to earn more money, to collect more assets, and in this way seemingly make his material situation more livable and easy. But if his spiritual life goes out the window, then actually everything is lost. He's wasted his time. Despite all his great endeavors, he may have, you know, one property, two properties, or three, one or two, three cars, like that, and maybe building up nice assets to pass on to his children. But factually, he's given away his greatest asset. So the greatest asset is love for Krishna, devotion, service to Krishna, and association of the devotee. This is our greatest asset. So we should not give this up by any means. Prabhupada, he said like that, whatever you do, don't leave ISKCON. There's nothing auspicious to be done there in the material world. It is like going and associating with dogs, hogs, camels, and asses. The Bhagavatam, the Acharyas, they have repeatedly stressed, it is just doggish life, hoggish life. People may look like human beings. They may be dressed with suit and tie. They may have a PhD. They may be very wealthy. But their consciousness is very similar to the consciousness of the animals. Simply eat, sleep, mate, and defend, enjoy material sense gratification. So that is not human life. Human life means there is spiritual activity. ahara nidra bayamaitunam cha samanyam etad pasubir naranam. So this verse, which is from the Hita Upanishad, means that both animals and human beings share the propensity for eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. But the special feature of human life is that one can engage in spiritual activities. Without spiritual activities, therefore, human life is no better than animal life. So that's straight from the Shastra, and that is the life of persons in the material world. So if you go and you associate with such persons, then you will also become like that. You know, a hog, dog, camel, or ass with a human mask on. That's all. And Lord Chaitanya, he said that materialistic life is like a ditch into which people pass through. So these are the kinds of statements that you find in the Shastras. No one's going to jump in a ditch where the, you know, stool. In Bengal, the system, instead of building walls around the property, they build a big ditch. And then they put the latrine on a kind of, you know, wooden planks and build it. So then people pass stool into the ditch. Actually, that fertilizes and they can grow many kinds of plants, sharp plants and, you know, bamboo, and that way they create a kind of protection around their property. But it's obviously not the kind of place somebody wants to fall into, so that attackers are like repelled by it. You see. So it is like that materialistic life, a place where people, a ditch where people pass through, is unpleasant place. So that's why one who is a devotee who has a taste of Krishna consciousness, For him, that is repulsive. Of course, the devotees, in order to maintain the families, or even to maintain the temple, we have to go out and collect Lakshmi from the non-devotees and use it in Krishna's service. But in order to do that, one has to maintain spiritual strength, because that heavy influence, can completely destroy one's spiritual strength. So therefore, the daily practice of good sadhana is essential for any devotee, whether brahmachari, grihastha, vanaprastha, or sannyasi. This is an absolute must. Attending the kirtans and aratiks and the classes and chanting one's japa in an attentive fashion. This is essential. Without this, in Kali Yuga, we don't have hope to remain situated in Krishna consciousness and to keep the demands of the mind and senses at bay. This is the means to discipline the mind and senses, to purify the mind and senses, and to keep them regulated and absorbed in Krishna's service. So Prabhupada has given us this practical system. It's very, very practical, and it's not difficult, but it requires determination. And there's great relish to be had if one becomes absorbed in this hearing and chanting activity. It's very pleasing to the ear and the heart. Satam prasanga mama virya samvido. That the messages of the Lord, they are very pleasing to the ear and the heart. So we should practice developing this taste, this ruchi, this higher taste for the holy name and for the worship of the Sri Vigraha, the beautiful deities. The worship of Tulsi Devi, the worship of Srimad Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita by constant hearing of them, and for the association of devotees. Now, of course, in the association of devotees, there may sometimes be misunderstanding, a conflict arising due to our past conditioning, or arising simply due to the stresses of sometimes the pressure of devotional service is also, you know, intense. And for whatever reason, there may be sometimes different kinds of misunderstandings between devotees, but we cannot afford to be overly sensitive and get too much disturbed by that or offended by that and withdraw from the association of devotees. That will be much worse. So better we have to, you know, tolerate all kinds of pressures or difficulties and somehow adopt an attitude of perseverance and forgiveness and willingness also to see in ourself the fault rather than always seeing it in others. This is very important for making progress in spiritual life. One has to be, he has to have that kind of attitude that if there's some misunderstanding with another devotee, that this is due either fully or partly to myself, and I have to be willing to rectify myself and improve myself and pray to Krishna that I can improve myself and thus maintain better relationships with the devotees. Because if we always think that, no, I'm not wrong, I'm right. If there's a misunderstanding, that's okay, but I'm right, and that person, you know, he's a fool. He's the cause of all the trouble. I'm right. And all these people are, you know, creating problems for me. And, you know, I'm better off, you know, just keeping out of it altogether. So if one maintains that mentality, then very difficult to remain in the association of devotees, because the association of devotees means, you know, sometime there is going to be some kind of chastisement towards us, or some, you know, someone's going to tell us, well, look, you know, this is what you're doing, you're not right, you're not correct. And so we have to be at least willing to, you know, give some serious consideration to that. You know, rather than always, you know, the false ego coming up and saying, no, I'm always right. Isn't it, Prabhupada? He said, fifth class man, he's always seeing faults in others and only virtues in himself. Fourth class, he sees mostly faults in others and little virtue, and mostly virtue in himself, a little fault. Third class, sort of equal fault and virtue he may see in himself and others. The second class, he's seeing mostly the virtues in others and notices the faults in himself. In the first class, he sees all the different virtues of all the other devotees, and in himself he sees so many, you know, faults. And we see the great acharyas, they always had that mentality of, you know, I'm the most fallen person, and not that meant I'm so fallen that I can't even stay here. It's not that one has to become depressed to the point where he said, well, what's the use, I'm so fallen. No, I'm so fallen, therefore I need the association of devotees, and I need some correction from the devotees. Like that, if he develops that kind of mood, that kind of attitude, then that means he can actually appreciate the association of devotees and understands the need he has, essential need. And that is the real nutrition for our spiritual life. You know, to be able to take the association of devotees, to have a love for the association of devotees, and to, you know, never want to give up the association of devotees. So if one has that attitude, then that's actually pleasing to Krishna, because Krishna says that the sadavo ridayam mayam sadunam ridayam tvaham madanya te na jananti naham tebyo managapi. The devotees are in my heart and I am in the heart of the devotees. They do not know anything else but me, and I also do not know anything else but them. They're very, very dear to Krishna, the devotees. And Krishna said, if one claims to be my devotee, he is not my devotee, but one who is the devotee of my devotee, he is my devotee. So we have to realize that this is the means to approach Krishna through the via media of the devotees. And in this purport here, Prabhupada says, temple worshippers who fail to give importance to the devotees are third class. they are Kanishta Adhikaris in the lower stage of spiritual life. So we have to try to rise above that platform. Rise above that platform. And the Madhyam Adhikari, he sees the devotees and he makes friendship with the devotees. He associates with the devotees and he avoids the association of envious atheistic persons. And for those persons who are in ignorance, he'll try to help them by preaching to them. But he always keeps himself well adjusted by engaging in the service of the Lord and associating with the devotees. But that's only possible if one has an appreciation for the devotees and sees how Krishna is working through the devotees. Is willing to accept that Krishna is talking to him through the devotees. So this is a kind of mentality that has to be developed, it has to be cultivated by each and every person individually. So then he can become strong in spiritual life, because as you know, in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, spiritual life is compared to a seed, Bhakti Lata Bij. So that seed has to be cultivated by hearing and chanting. And just like young trees are fenced around by, young creepers are fenced around by some small fencing. So we have to protect the Bhakti Lata creeper. And the protection or the fencing is the association of the devotees. So that way one is kind of... He is immunized against the attacks of gross material desires and the influence of gross materialists. So we should know, therefore, for sure that for our spiritual development and welfare, we have to come to the temple, we have to keep the association of the devotees, and we have to chant the holy names, read the scriptures, and we have to perform devotional service also. There has to be some sacrifice, something done for Krishna, something done to spread Krishna consciousness. The more the better. The more fully one can do that, the more he's going to become spiritually benefit and make progress. So we always have to keep these considerations foremost in our mind, individually and also as a society. If we do, then the Bhakti Lata creepers will flourish. Everyone's creeper will flourish. So then there'll be so many, you know, flourishing creepers of devotion. So that will create very wonderful atmosphere that will become attractive to others. Yes, this is a group of persons. They're all making spiritual progress. I'm also suffering in material life. Let me take some shelter and get some strength from their association. So in this way, the maintenance of the temple and the development of temples for the worship of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, these activities are essential activities and essential welfare activities for the upliftment of human society. Unless we do these things, then there's no chance for the other persons who are completely absorbed in material consciousness.